Well, I first got interested in it when I saw that someone had been charged with drug-induced homicide, which is a relatively rare charge in Illinois and particularly in Sangamon County. This was a gentleman who was charged earlier this year based on an overdose death that occurred in October of 2012. He's the first person, so far as anybody knows, who is likely going to have his charge adjudicated on drug-induced homicide. There had been only one other person charged in Sangamon County with that, and that charge was ultimately transferred to federal court, and it went away in one form or another. Anywho, I'd heard about this case, and then, frankly, I'd heard about these judges who got involved with drugs. One of them had a fatal cocaine overdose in Pike County this past spring. And that's really what kind of prompted me, is like, wait a minute, we got judges involved with heroin, although that wasn't the judge who died. Another one who died of cocaine overdose. And we got this guy here in Sangamon County who's facing drug-induced homicide charges, ended up finding some pretty good stats in terms of fairly dramatic increases in heroin overdoses. It's down somewhat this year. Nobody really knows what the future holds. 2011 and 2012 were quite literally killers, both in Sangamon County and throughout the state of Illinois.
You say in your article that the tests needed to determine what type of opiates have caused death is not routinely used. What does that mean as far as finding the true numbers of death caused by heroin specifically?
Well, they don't keep real good track of heroin overdoses specifically. Not to get too far into the weeds here, but what happens with heroin is it's metabolized into morphine when it enters the body. And the only way to pinpoint whether it was heroin or another opiate, mainly morphine, because codeine is probably the only other really widespread opiate, and that's not routinely abused. Folks don't routinely overdose on cough syrup or codeine pills. So the only way to really do it is that you have to test the blood, and you also have to test the urine. And the urine contains the telltale marker that it was, in fact, heroin. And that's not routinely done in Sangamon County or elsewhere. Cook County, for example, where the vast majority of overdose deaths occur, they do not routinely do that, although they're planning to start doing that in view of the large number of overdoses that they're experiencing up there.
Locally, you write that the folks getting busted for heroin are not the usual suspects. Can you explain what that means?
I got all the Springfield police reports on overdose responses for 2011 and through the current 2013. And so I got all of 2011 and all of 2012 and up to this year. And, you know, there was an overdose this past spring at a lawyer's home. I thought it was in Leland Grove, but it turns out that it's just right on the outskirts for all intents and purposes. You know, this is not a place where you expect folks to be found overdosing. You find them in rich parts of town. You find them in not rich parts of town. You find them with folks who have long histories of drug abuse. You find them with folks who are, I think the oldest person was 59. The youngest person, I think, was 18 or 19. The person who died, I think I did see one overdose death. The person was only something like 19 years old, and she'd had a long history of drug abuse. And, you know, when I spoke with the coroner, she indicated to me that in most cases, this is not a huge surprise to the folks who are left behind, who the decedent is typically someone who'd struggled with drug issues for a long period of time.
And you write that there's this kind of crossover from meth users switching to heroin, and it sounds like pharmaceuticals are getting a little harder to get your hands on, so maybe there's crossover from those drug users as well, to where that might indicate some reasoning as to why heroin use is up, possibly?
Well, I think there's two schools of thought on that matter. The police will tell you, and perhaps not surprisingly so, that their theory is that heroin use is up because they've done such a good job, both the police and the legislature, in terms of cracking down on meth precursors, that nobody's able to get methamphetamine anymore. And so they're switching to heroin, or at least methamphetamine is getting harder to get. There's the other school of thought that says, no, this is a byproduct of a drug culture in our country. And this is actually somewhat fueled by a report from the Centers of Disease Control, which was issued just on July 1st. Overdoses of all sorts have just skyrocketed in the United States. They became the leading cause of accidental death in America in 2008. More people die of drug overdoses than of gunshot wounds, than of automobile accidents. And the leading demographic for drug overdoses, and keep in mind this isn't just heroin, is middle-aged women. That's where it's rising the fastest. And so the folks who are not the police and consider themselves experts, some of them will say, look, prescription painkillers have gotten bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and now that there's becoming a growing awareness of this, the feds are starting to monitor prescriptions. It's getting harder for physicians, whether they're doing it for nefarious reasons or just because they're doing it naively. It's getting harder for folks to doctor shop. It's getting harder for physicians to be able to prescribe large amounts of painkillers without getting on the DEA's radar screen. And so that, and there's been reformulations. OxyContin, for example, I'm told they've reformulated it so it's more difficult now to inject OxyContin and some other drugs. And so the switch off is they're moving to heroin. And it's also very cheap. I mean, folks are overdosing on $20 hits of heroin. That's not very much money. When I was doing this story, I was thinking about, geez, the last time I had an injury, my copay was more than a hit of heroin. So at any rate, there's any number of theories. And so maybe it's a little bit of both, but it's definitely becoming a big issue.
You're listening to WUIS. I'm Rachel Otwell, and I'm joined by Bruce Rushton, who is here talking about his feature article in the Illinois Times about heroin use and what social services and police and law enforcement are doing to crack down on that. Now, Bruce, is there any way to tell the percentage of people who die from drug overdoses? What amount of those would be from heroin versus other drugs?
The numbers that I found were not real good. I tried to go to the Centers for Disease Control, and the only way they track it is if heroin, the word heroin, appears on a death certificate. And that's very, very rare. I mean, under that sort of a scenario, for example, none of these overdoses in Cook County would be counted because they all have just say opiate overdose as opposed to heroin overdose. The best they can do, and again, it's with deeply, you know, everybody recognizes that there's some inherent weaknesses in that data. There were roughly 2,000 occasions in 1999 where the word heroin appeared on somebody's death certificate in the United States. Now that's up to over 3,000 today.
And so one issue here when it comes to reporting overdose cases has to do with the risk people run in possibly incriminating themselves,
yeah.
Correct?
Yeah. Some studies, Drug Policy Alliance cite studies that as many as 50% or more of fatal overdoses are preventable if someone would just call 911. But you can kind of understand the situation to some extent. These folks are doing drugs. They're not in their right mind. B, there's a great deal of fear involved. They're afraid that if they call 911, they're going to get arrested. And under Illinois, in fact, law, they could. The history of the law, I think, is fairly interesting. It was first approved by the General Assembly in the late 80s and went completely unused for more than a decade. Nobody in Illinois was ever charged with drug-induced homicide because there was a quantity element to the statute, and you had to show that someone had supplied the victim with a pretty considerable amount of drugs. In the case of heroin, it had to be 10 grams or more. Well, you know, that's enough to kill an elephant. And so in 2002, the legislature removed all quantity provisions from the statute so there could be any amount and could lead to a drug-induced homicide charge. And curiously, it wasn't a heroin case which led to the change in the statute. It was an ecstasy overdose. And it actually wasn't even in Illinois. It was in New Jersey. And the mother of the unfortunate victim happened to live in Illinois, and that's how it came here. So over the years, the law has evolved. And once they removed the quantity provisions, folks started to go to jail for this.
So, Bruce, what's been the reaction of law enforcement and social service agencies in trying to combat this trend of heroin use?
I think what we're seeing is a 180-degree approach in terms of law enforcement and social service agencies. Law enforcement has shown, as the heroin problem has gotten worse, there has been, I think, an increased tendency in prison folks when there are overdoses. This is true not only on a state level but also on a federal level. There have been needle exchange programs which have been hugely controversial in some communities. In Rockford, in I believe it was 2011, the police served a search warrant, did a raid on a needle exchange program, and it's then shut down. For folks that I talked to in needle exchange programs outside of Cook County, and I got to emphasize this, in Cook County in Chicago, these programs are allowed to operate with relative openness. I mean, folks know where they're at. They've got web addresses. It's easy to find these folks. Not so outside Cook County. And the folks that I talked to were extremely reluctant to even publicize their existence. And I was able to interview one person on the condition that I not name her organization, I not name where it's located, I not name her, because she was very afraid that the same thing that happened in Rockford and also in Belleville. In Belleville, the police, the city has sued and successfully a needle exchange program saying that they need a special condition. It's a zoning issue for them. And given that the city has never been thrilled with their existence to begin with, it's not likely that they're going to be getting their permit. So at the end of the day, you've got folks that are saying, Let's provide clean needles to these folks. They also provide naloxone to those folks. And naloxone is an antidote which instantaneously reverses the effect of a heroin overdose. It's actually a miracle drug in terms of its ability to block the receptors in the brain that respond to opiates and get folks that would otherwise be dead. Within minutes, they're sitting up, "What happened to me?" And so they distribute naloxone to addicts and other folks that are close to addicts, loved ones that would be in a position to hopefully save some lives. The distribution of naloxone by lay people, so to speak, was enabled by the legislature in 2010. And so they did make it legal for folks to distribute naloxone in emergency situations. And that's a relatively recent change in law. Also a relatively recent change in law was a quote-unquote shield law that was approved in 2012. And that means that if you call 911 in case of overdose, you cannot be charged with drug possession. And so that's a step in the right direction in terms of the folks who hold that you should do anything possible to reduce harm. However, they also say the caveat is if you call 911 to save your friend's life in the case of a drug overdose, you can't be charged with possession. You can, however, be charged with drug-induced homicide if that person dies. And so, great, I can't be charged with drug possession, which would probably bring probation if I was a first offender, but I could go to jail for between 6 and 30 years if the person dies. There have been other states, Vermont for one, just in June approved a new law where you can't be charged with anything whatsoever if you call 911 in good faith to save somebody's life. It'll be interesting how it plays out. These programs that are distributing on the down low outside of the Chicago area, they're distributing the naloxone, they're distributing the needles, they're also doing hepatitis C testing, and they report some remarkable success. The person who I spoke with, they really started to gain momentum in January. In January of just this year, they served, I think, 6 people.
So it sounds like Chicago is the place in Illinois where heroin users overall really have some social service agencies to use.
Chicago has been on the cutting edge, certainly in Illinois, of social services response to heroin. Beginning in the 1990s, they instituted the needle exchange program. The first needle exchange program in the United States was done in the late 1980s, so they were relatively fresh in terms of following the leads in other parts of the country. In 1996, they began a naloxone distribution program, even though there was not a state law at that point in time which allowed that. And they have been allowed to operate, to my knowledge, free from law enforcement interference. I've spoken to folks that have watched the needle exchange van in Chicago, and they say the folks that pull up to get clean needles, they show up in Cadillacs, they show up in on bicycles, they show up dressed in suit and ties, they show up dressed in cutoff jeans and dirty T-shirts. It's the whole gamut of society. And so if Chicago was any indication about what might be coming our way, I think we should be prepared for more and more folks having an experience with it, someone they know or someone in their family.